This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances, check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those new year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model, offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and threw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward, so grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Do you like to be outdoors like I do? If so, unlock the wilderness with Onyx Maps. It is your ultimate guide to exploring, hunting, and conquering the great outdoors. With detailed maps, real-time tracking, and exclusive access to public and private lands, Onyx Maps is your key to adventure. Discover the possibilities and never get lost again with Onyx. So subscribe today using the promo code K920, letter K, number 920, and know where you stand. All right. So I'm gonna nickname his YouTube. We're gonna call it KPTV. That's what you should do, Kirk. You just call it KPTV.
I like it.
Yeah. No, that's gonna be the title of this podcast. So I met Kirk down at Plot Days this year. Of course, if you're like me, everybody follows him. He's pushing 200,000 subscribers on YouTube. So I know everybody listening to this podcast is following him. And if you're not following him, you need to go on there and like and follow. But I met Kirk down there. He was so busy. Like, he was signing autographs. He was selling merchandise. But as it slowed down Saturday evening, I got to spend a little time. We probably spent an hour talking dogs and this and that. And the common denominator here is we're both running some of the same line of dogs. So we got to talking about, you know, traits and stuff that we're seeing out of each other's dogs. But, guys, this is going to be a good one. So, Kirk, I know it's getting late in the evening. I appreciate you taking your evening to sit down and talk to us. And I'm really thrilled to have you on.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me here. I'm excited to be on. I mean, I've listened to your podcast for years now, so this is exciting to be on here.
Yeah, we're a little over two, May, June, July. Yeah, so we're a little over 2 years in. So, well, it's funny because before I listened to your podcast, and you were on with another channel when you was on Clay Newcomb's, and then, you know, I got to following and watching, and, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, I've kind of watched you over the years progress and grow, and, you know, now you're doing your own thing, and it's just like, I mean, you're I don't know what the word I want to use. It's growing.
Yes. Yeah, it has. It, especially in the last year, it's really grown, and I've been extremely, extremely fortunate. But yeah, I've been grinding away at it.
So let's talk about your YouTube channel real quick. And then just kind of what your thought process is when you started selling the meat dog products. Mm-hmm. And you kind of come up with your own branding and stuff. What was that process like for you?
So the term meat dog was actually stolen. I pirated that term from either Trace or my buddy Chad that you see in the videos. They started using the term meat dog. And then I was like, man, that would look good on a t-shirt. And it was, we call our dogs that just because we hunt them on a little bit of everything. Mountain lion, bear, raccoon, bobcat, you know. Sometimes deer. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, my dogs are running the fur off of them.
So that's how kind of the term meat dog came about. So yeah, so we've got I've got some stickers, t-shirts and stuff like that. Because it's kind of hard, especially starting off, like, to my YouTube channel is just Kirk Price, but it's kind of hard to like get another grown man to wear a t-shirt that says your name on it. So I was like, I got to come up with something cool, you know, some type of branding. And that's what we happen to call our dogs. So it worked out.
Yeah. And your stuff's got KP on it. So,
right. So there is some personal branding in there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like my KP logo.
Yeah.
So yeah, of course that's just short for my name, but I thought that logo looked cool and I use it on the chest harnesses and different stuff, different product. So
you sold out of those chest rigs like quick, didn't you?
Yeah. The chest harnesses have been great. I've got some people actually mad at me because they're supposed to be in stock in spring and here we are in July and I still don't have them in stock. So I'm working on getting more of them. I'm actually about to come out with the second generation. We're gonna introduce some camo patterns. I'm changing up some things about it. It'll be pretty sweet.
Nice. Yeah, you know, I know you and I talked probably last year about some of that stuff, and you know, we've chatted back and forth little bit over some of the stuff you're running and what I'm using, and just kind of going back and forth with equipment. So, you know, coming up with a chest rig is a good thing. Like, I always hated those antennas poking me in the face. And yeah. I don't know how many coon supply companies, like I was at the Grand America 2 years ago, and I won't mention the company's name. That way, if they're listening, they won't beat me to death. But I was like, you've got to change the pockets on them things. The antennas go straight. If you're using a long range antenna, they're right up in your face and they're flopping around. And it's just, they're, all they have to do is tilt the pocket, and nobody would ever do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So with my harness, they actually are vertical, but I put two little, I don't even know what you'd call them, like accessory hooks where you can take those longer antennas and tuck it right back down into there. So I've had the vertical ones and kind of getting them in and out where they're a little bit awkward. It works, but I figured out, you know, if I put those two pockets in the front and then I have those hooks on the side, if you have a longer antenna that's going to be in your face, you can tuck it right back down in there. So that's what I prefer. But my favorite antenna is that little short stubby orange one. Cause I keep my long range. I use two Garmin handhelds. I keep one hooked up to a long range antenna in my side by side at all times. And then I keep one on me. The one on me is when I'm just out walking into a tree or they're about to cross and I'm out of the buggy. So
are you running, have you got the new 300?
Yes. So I have the 300 in the buggy and I have the 200, I carry on me, but I would really like to swap that 200 out for a 300 because the 300 just, I mean, it's that much faster. I like it a lot better.
And the battery life on
them. Oh my gosh. Yeah. In my opinion, I don't want to speak for Garmin. I don't know what happened there, but they like rushed out. I don't say they rushed it out. It took years to come out with the 200, like 10 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it was during COVID, if you remember, is when they came out with it. And that's also when they came out with the TT15X, which was a flop. They came out with both those products and it was something to do with COVID. I know it was. And then they ditched both of those already. And now you've got the 300 and the TT25s, which are awesome. I like both of them, but like the 200, no, the 300 is what the 200 should have been. They just got me to spend $700 twice.
Exactly. I'm in the same boat. And in fact, I was not going to buy a 200. I had told myself no. And me and a buddy was hunting one day. And we got to talking about the 200, and he's like, "Well, why don't you let me take it home and connect it to my iPad?" And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, let me connect it to my iPad. There's a Garmin app you can download." So I let him take it home. Let me rephrase that. I had borrowed a 200 from Forrest because I didn't have one. And Toby took it home, downloaded it to his iPad, brought it back the next morning, and we were looking at the big screen, you know, like your Treads now.
Yep.
Looking at it, and I'm like, dang, man, I'm getting rid of my drive track. You know, this iPad is 10 times better. And we used that thing for a week, and when I give Forrest his 200 back, I went and bought one.
Yeah.
Like, I had to have it. And I'm like you, that 200 never left my truck. I still use my 100. In fact, I just got a new 300. So my 100 is my spare now, but I never took the 200 out of my truck. It stayed hooked up to my long range antenna, Bluetooth connected to my iPad. And I know people use the treads is a really nice piece of equipment and the drive track, but the drive track, that 7-inch screen, so small.
Yeah.
Like I have a hard, you got to scroll in and out, in and out, in and out.
Right.
So that just worked better for me.
Have you used the tread yet?
I have not.
Oh, so
I've seen you pitching it.
Yeah. There's a reason. They are sweet. Now, I mean, you've heard me. I'll dog a Garmin product if I don't like it. The tread with the 300 like hooked to it. My 200 was a little, it wouldn't, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just a bug. I tried it twice and the 200 seemed to be inconsistent on there, would throw off dogs that it would show them correct on the 200. Then on a screen, they'd be somewhere. I don't know what was going on, but the 300 with that Tread XL, I think there's a regular tread and then the XL version.
It's the 14.
Yeah. And that XL is, once you start using that, it's going to ruin you. You're going to put the iPad away.
I don't know, man. I just got me, I don't know. You can't see it on here, but I just got the iPad Pro, which is it's 14 inches. So, but I looked at it. In fact, when I was at SHOT Show last year, like I kept going back and looking at it, and you know, Mark was there, and I kept going back and looking at it and going back and looking at it. And I'm like, oh, I can't do it.
I'm telling you, I know you got the iPad, but Garmin pays me $0. I'm not affiliated with them at all. The Tread is legit.
All right. Well, maybe somebody in my group will drop a dime on it, and then I can.
Yeah, no, they're expensive. They're like $1,500.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. That's why I don't have it.
Right. They track in 3D though. Like you can literally watch your dogs run the face of the mountain or down.
That's crazy.
And it where they need to do a software update where it shows bark indicators and stuff on there. It doesn't show bark indicators. So I've got my handheld set to vibrate whenever I get 20 barks per minute or whatever. And so I'll hear it down in my little cubby where I keep it. And I'll hear it, and I'll pull it up and look, see what dog's opening because they're trailing or something. And so that needs fixed on it. But other than that, it's money.
Well, it's funny you say that 3D because Doug DeVoe sent me a couple pictures, him and a couple 2 weeks ago. And one of them was like the screen of something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in 3D. And I'm like, I texted him back. I was like, Doug, what program do you have? And he goes, oh, it's on my Treads.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what it was. But yeah, it had everything. Little holler, the dogs went up and
yeah.
So,
and you can turn on the topo lines or you know, activate them, or it can just be purely the Google Earth or whatever the maps they use. And then
how are the maps?
They're great. It looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It looks awesome. And then you can record your tracks on there. Like for mine, it's my side by side tracks. Mm-hmm. And so, and record it and save it there where that way it's always there. So let's say you come and hunt with me and you've never been there before. You can record your tracks the whole time and then save it. And then next time you come and hunt, you don't have to say, Kirk, my dog split off and going down to this holler. How do I get down there? Like it's already there. So everywhere I go, I save tracks and you can drop pins on there and be like, road blocked. Don't bother going up this road. You can't turn around. You know, I'll drop a pin and type it on there real quick.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Really nice. Yeah. Well, hopefully one of my rich hunting partners will invest so I can check it out.
There you go.
All right. So do you want to talk about Africa first or do you want to talk about dogs? I'm going to let you pick.
We'll save the good stuff for later. So let's talk about Africa.
Okay.
Africa was good, but dogs are better.
Yeah. Okay. Lay it on me. So tell me about your trip, how long you stayed. Like I said, I watched some of your videos. You posted a bunch of pictures, good pictures on Instagram. So tell us about it.
Yep. So I went to Africa with two friends of mine, Mike Yoder, who owns Drone Deer Recovery. He owns a company that is really blown up in the last year. It's the thermal drones that, you know, people are using to recover deer in states that are, of course, it's legal. And in a lot of states, it's still illegal. West Virginia, one of them. But
it's illegal in West Virginia.
Yes.
Drone recovery is
a drone to recover a deer. So you can't take a thermal drone in there and recover a deer.
Okay.
I anticipate they'll change that eventually, but that's besides the point. So I went with Mike and then another friend of mine, Braden Price, who has a YouTube channel as well. And Mike actually kind of set the deal up. He went out there to visit a South African drone manufacturer.
Mm.
And they wanted him to check out some of their drones to potentially sell. And so he had a mutual friend. And long story short, we went to an African safari in South Africa. So that was a total just different experience. I mean, initially, of course, which you kind of mentioned there before we hopped on the podcast, but a 17-hour flight.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad as what I thought. I thought it was going to be a lot worse, but I stayed up for the beginning of it. And then they fed you and I fell asleep for like 8 or 9 hours. I mean, I slept great on the plane. And then we got there and I don't even know, it was like 30 something hours worth of traveling we did before we actually got to where we're staying. The worst was the 3-hour truck ride from the time we got in Africa, and then we took another flight and then we had to ride in a truck for 3 hours. And these aren't like this isn't going up and down the interstate, you know, in West Virginia, mm-hmm. wherever you're from. This was, these were African back roads.
Yeah. It was a bush.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was cool though, and something that I thought was just awesome right off the bat was their, the Toyota Hiluxes. So of course, most houndsmen, a lot of houndsmen, I should say, hunt out of Toyota Tacomas. Me being one of them, I have a Tacoma. I've had multiple Tacomas, and I've always wanted to see one of these Toyota Hiluxes. Some people pronounce it Helix. I even said that in the video, but I got corrected. It's Hilux. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a diesel Tacoma, which is sweet to see. And they are tough. They're tough. So we hopped in one of those and then took it to where we were actually staying. And then, yeah, we hunted all week. Within the first 5 minutes, I shot the first 5 minutes of the actual hunts. The next morning, we go and they take you to a range and make sure that you can hit the broadside of a barn. And then we go out, and like the first 5 minutes, there's a baboon standing in a farmer's field. And they had mentioned that we could shoot baboons, and not something, you know, I was going there to shoot. But they're like, listen, they're a nuisance. If we see them, especially down in here around the ag fields and stuff, like, we want them out. So we come around the turn, and then sure enough, there's a baboon right out in the middle of this field. And it was a big one. So it's actually pretty bizarre because I didn't know how people were going to take it, because literally my guide is like, we're looking at it. I was like, what is? And he's like, get the gun. Next thing I know, my brother, who went with me to film, is in the back seat trying to hand me this gun up to me in the front. And it's like a 7x64 is the caliber. It's got this massive barrel on it with a huge silencer. And I literally reach it out and shoot it out of the truck window, which is legal. Like, you are allowed to do it. Especially getting rid of like a nuisance like that. And that was the start of my African trip, which was 0 to 100, right.
Kind of like bear hunting, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just like bear hunting. So that was quite the start.
So before we get into the hunt, talk about the climate, the weather, the ground conditions and stuff too. Cause that's something that when I talk to the guys from that area, plays a big part in their actual hound experience.
Yeah, I could see that being a place where you better have cold-nosed dogs, just because of there's no moisture. Like, it is dry. I mean, when you think of Africa, you see them putting in wells for people and doing things like that because it's dry everywhere. I mean, they go what they were just talking about when I was there, talking about a drought that they had like 2 or 3 years ago that killed numerous animals. And also I can tie that into the baboons. They said, and part of the reason they want the baboons controlled is because they have sheep out there. They're everywhere. I saw them every single day we hunted. We run into sheep farms and different things, and those baboons will run down a sheep and they'll find a nursing one, grab it, tear it open alive, tear open its milk sack, and drink that milk whenever there's a drought. Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, wow.
And so those farmers are like, kill those baboons. Like, we do not want them here. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. So, but yeah. As far as tying that back to dogs, you know, it is very, very dry. I can imagine that. I mean, of course, I don't think you're dealing with any snow there. You're going to have dry ground cat dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and did they talk about the rain season any?
No, and I have very little knowledge of it.
Yeah. All right, so you got you a baboon, and then you killed several. Did you kill a warthog?
Yep, so I killed a warthog, and that was pretty cool. They, like, the area, we actually drove 2 hours to go warthog hunt, and it was actually on a farmer. He has fences, and apparently they tear holes through his fence. And once again, it's for sheep. So we went to a farm actually to kind of manage and control the warthog population. And I killed two warthogs, I actually killed a female and a little one. And the female, like, the tusks she had were just incredible. They were so much bigger than, you know, the hogs, the feral hogs that we have here in the States. So that was pretty cool. And then I killed a black wildebeest, which was that was amazing. It was something like you see in a movie or a TV show where you hear like a stampede. You could literally feel these things running 200 or 300 yards away and hear it and just feel the vibration of them stampeding, and they hop around, and that was super cool. And then I killed a red-hearted beast too. And that was something we hunted for all week long. And towards the end of the week, I finally got a shot opportunity at one. And let me tell y'all, if you plan on going to Africa, take your own gun. They're going to try to talk you out of doing it, because it could, you know, you could imagine trying to get a rifle on multiple flights all the way to Africa. You could run into issue. But it's like, I think it's like a $200, $250 fee and stamp you got to pay. Yeah. In Africa, for bringing a rifle. But you know, you're that way, because all the shots that I had, like, I think the closest shot was like 280 meters. So whatever that is in yards. And I just got used to talking meters with them. And I switched my rangefinder over to meters, and I didn't even know what it was in yards. I know it's a little bit further. Yards would be further, but that was, so take your own weapon and be very proficient, because these animals, I had kind of an idea of what I thought was like riding around on the truck in Africa. You could just shoot off the truck. No, these animals were super skittish, and you had to be able to shoot and far.
So what cap, you said you was using a
7x64. Yeah, it's like a European hunting round.
That's like a 308, right?
Yes, essentially. Yeah. Actually, right? I was like, okay, compare that to a 308 to me. He's like, a little bit bigger, I think.
Okay. So if you were to take your own gun, you'd want to take 30-06?
30-06, 308, 7mm, just an all-around gun that you could shoot a deer-sized animal with, but also you could take down something bigger.
And it's got some range to it.
And it shoots pretty flat. You want something. You definitely don't want to be taking, lever action 35 or, you know.
You don't want to go wild, wild west.
right. I mean, you could for, I guess, certain hunts, like the big game, I'm thinking like the water buffalo or whatever it is. So maybe I think you're getting pretty close for those. But
so did you get to eat any of that?
Yeah. So that was a big question I got. And we would actually, like, throughout the week, we were pretty much eating the people that hunted there the week before us, or even a little bit before that, the stuff they killed. So they have kind of like their own little butcher shop there where they process it. And then they use that to feed clients. And then also, it was pretty cool. I walked into a gas station, and they had like kudu steaks laid out everywhere. And different cuts of kudu. So it would be like us walking into a Go-Mart or whatever your gas station, an Exxon, whatever. And then there's elk steaks there that you could buy. So that was pretty cool. And then of course they give some of the meat to the helpers around the property or their guides or different stuff.
Right. Well, that sounds interesting. So what was your favorite part of the hunt? What was something that like stood out to you?
So my favorite thing would probably be the fact that like every animal you saw was new to you. I had never been somewhere that like a lot of times I'm like, what's that? And some of it was obvious. Like you saw a warthog. I mean, you know what a warthog looks like, but a lot of these different types of deer or impala, or, you know, there's just a lot going on with it. As far as the different animals, I mean, we would see giraffes, we'd see zebras.
Nice.
It was all over the place. So yeah. Just that total experience of everything being new. That was, you know, you only get that opportunity once for it being brand new to you. So that was pretty cool.
And they couldn't hook you up with a hound hunt?
Oh no, we tried. As soon as we got there, I was like, listen, I do a lot of hound hunting. I was like, here's my YouTube channel. It would be great for my video, because of course I want to make a video of the trip if we could do that. And I can't remember what the what it was called. I could probably figure it out real quick with a simple Google search. But he put the guy that owns the safari put out a filler to the local houndsman that if you all have a track that you're going to run or something, get a hold of us and we'll gun it there. So, and I was hoping, you know, what I was worried about is, well, if it's 2 hours down the road or whatever, chances are they already have a tree and I'll just walk into it, you know, a tree or something. And that's not what I wanted. I kind of wanted to document the whole experience of it. And I did see a pack of dogs when I was down there. From a distance, I could see a kennel they had them in, but I didn't get to get up close and really look at them.
Was it blue dogs?
No, I don't think it was. They looked more like foxhounds to me.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting to go and talk to them, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and that, like, one day I want to take a hound-specific trip to Africa where it's just all... In fact, I just watched a YouTube video where a guy went to Africa and he was hunting with natives that were hunting bush pigs. And these guys are literally running around barefoot hunting with these mutts and baying up bush pigs, you know, and then killing them. And like, if I could go film that or just be a part of that, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, getting to hunt with native, you know, Africans, getting to run their dogs that like, the dogs are just no collars, nothing. They stay with their group that they know, you know, and get to see that authentic. I mean, those are houndsmen right there. That's cool.
Yeah, that's about as that's about as far back as you can go, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. As raw as it gets. I mean, that's sweet.
Yeah, for sure. So how many days were you over there?
The total trip was around 10 days. I think we spent about a day and a half traveling there and then, you know, 7 days there and a day and a half traveling back. And I actually got very sick while I was there. It didn't make the video, just because it was at the very end of it.
You didn't drink the water, did you?
I did drink the water. We were drinking, but they have spring water. Luckily right where we were staying, they have a spring on the property. And everyone there was drinking it. They, you know, that was addressed right off the bat. They wanted us to know the water's safe, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, in Africa, you have, this circles back to me getting sick, but you have a PH who takes you around, and that stands for professional hunter. And that's your guide. And then you have helpers, that they call trackers, and the trackers always want to volunteer to carry the animal, gut the animal. And I didn't like that, but that, you know, I was, when I shoot something, I want to gut it and then I want to help drag it out. And they would almost get offended if I would volunteer or try to do it. But on the red hearted beast I shot, I was like, listen, y'all gutted the warthogs. I was like, that's fine. I was like, I am gutting this. I was like, I don't care if you get mad at me, I'm going to gut this. So on the red hearted beast, I was gutting it. And it was, you know, sometimes it can get a little messy when you're gutting it, especially if you hit something back in that gut area. And I don't know if something kind of got in my mouth, like very, very small. I didn't taste it if it did, but I do remembering it spewing, like psst, making that sound. And on the walk out, I started feeling bad. And then next thing you know, we're almost back to the camp and I'm like, Stop. So I hop out. I'm on my hands and knees. I'm throwing up, sick as a dog. And then for like the next 16 hours, I was in misery. Didn't eat for close to 24 hours. And everybody else was drinking the same water, eating the same food. There's no way, you know, I can't imagine it was that. And that was at the end of the trip. I had been drinking it the whole time. So I don't know. I don't know what caused it. We're thinking that the red hearted beast, me gutting it, maybe something happened there where I ingested a little bit of it. I didn't. If I did, I'm not aware that I did. But yeah, it was literally the worst. It was one of the worst I've ever felt. I mean, it was excruciating. My stomach literally in cramping. I mean, and I threw up. I can't even tell you how many times.
Well, next time you'll let them gut that thing, right?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Maybe that's why they wanted to do it so bad, is to keep me from experiencing that.
Well, so did that put you down for the rest of the hunt?
Yeah. So I, like the end of the hunt, I was really targeting a kudu. I wanted to kill a kudu. Like, that's like the animal in Africa. That's kind of like their elk. And so, it ruined 2 days of hunting for me that evening. And then the next day I couldn't go.
That's crazy.
Yep.
But by the time you left, you were back to
normal. By the time I left, I was back, but I was terrified when I was like 6 hours in and just feeling the worst of it. I was like, I'm not going to an African hospital, and I'm getting on that plane when it's ready. So I better figure out a way to suck it up because I'm going home.
You didn't want to be stuck over there, right?
Right, right. But like I said, it wasn't the facility. Like, where we stayed was awesome. It was safe. Everything about it was great. I just had something freakishly happen to me, and I can't explain it. Maybe it was dehydration or something. Maybe I wasn't drinking enough water. I don't know.
No, I'd say you got into something. That had to be. If your stomach was cramping like that, it had to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, I couldn't, I hope I never experience it again. That was the first time I've ever felt that bad.
So your intention, you're going to go back someday, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That won't keep me from going back. I just hope I'll just stay away from the red hearted beast.
No, like I said, that's a trip that I've been made a couple offers to go, and I definitely want to go over and do some training with some of the guys that do the tracking, you know, tracking the poachers.
Yep.
So I don't know. And it's kind of funny that, so one of the guys that I'm tied into, Clinton, some of the dogs that he gets from Karika are their old blue dog. They're blue dogs. They're Gascon. Well, he crossed a petite Gascon with some blue dogs, and that's what they hunt. I mean, they hunt, you know, I don't want to say it wrong, so don't murder the messenger, but I don't know if it's Jags or leopards. One of them they say is really dangerous, like bad dangerous to hunt, but that's something I'd love to do if I went over there. Like
I think it's leopards.
The leopards are?
I think it's leopards, yeah. Could be wrong. Could be wrong. But yeah, no, that's definitely something. Like, I mean, we discussed it a little bit. That's I just want to go document it and see it. I mean, that's some cool hunting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anything else on Africa before we move over to the
Not that I can think of, other than in the video, we flew out my red hearted beast, actually.
I seen that.
Flew it out with a drone. And so if you're listening to this, you watch my YouTube channel, I'm kind of figuring out the legalities of it, because I don't know how it's going to work, but we're talking about trying to quarter up a bear and fly it out this fall. So that
with a drone?
Yeah, with a drone.
Well, how big does that drone have to be?
Oh, it's a beast. It's literally like, it's bigger than a truck hood. I mean, it is, the video I put up does not do it justice.
And you know, I did not pay attention to that. So in my mind, I'm thinking it was a helicopter. Like, that's what, until you just said it was a drone, I didn't catch that.
No, it's a remote control drone.
And what was the range on that?
Oh, it far, super far. Now in the video, we're actually using an agriculture drone. Mm-hmm. Which, and the only reason why is because when we got there, Mike, who owns the drone company, had gotten contact with a drone rental company, and they only had the ag drones there. They actually, DJI makes one called the Flight Cart. Mm-hmm. And it has crazy range. It's got a little retractable claw that will pick something up and carry it. You know, it hooks to it. It's made for picking up and carrying stuff out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like where Mike sees that useful, and he's going to sell them, where he sees it useful is an outfitter in, let's say Arizona is elk hunting, and they've got a giant bull down in a canyon, and they don't get it out of there, it's going to spoil. Well, with those DJI flight carts, you can literally, like, you can fly it down in the canyon, pick it up. Let's say it's an elk quarter, and you can fly it to another one, and they can literally pass it off.
What?
And take it to another location, and it can fly. It is, until you see it in person, it's unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, I put in for my preference points for Wyoming. I'm trying to draw me an elk tag. I want to go elk hunting so bad I can't stand it. So I put in for my preference point today. They just opened today. So
good deal. I need to do that too. I've got some points in Wyoming.
Oh, do you?
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
do you have any, contacts out there?
I do.
Okay. I was gonna say, I know a few places and people out there that could help you if you did, but
yeah, well, we just keep that in mind. Well, I may keep that in mind just in case the other don't work out, but,
right.
So yeah, anyway, yeah, that's great. Like, you know, we use drones a lot at work and, like ours is specifically for like their military grade with the FLIR and stuff, which I'm assuming about anybody can buy anything anymore. But yeah. having one that big is like, I remember seeing it pick it up and carry it off, but I thought it was a helicopter. I didn't pay attention. It was a drone.
No, it was a drone.
Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting. So you film that stuff some fall. That'll be pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's when we were doing that there. And that's part of the reason Mike wanted to go to Africa is one, to meet that other drone company, but also legalities of carrying something. You know, there are weird laws and I don't say weird, they're definitely put in place on purpose. That way you don't have a guy flying a white-tailed deer out of a holler that happens to be next to an airport.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are rules and stuff that you have to abide by. So I know Mike is going to navigate that and figure that out. I'm sure he already has. But Africa was kind of a test run.
Gotcha. And they have the technology over there to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. And so like, you know, parts of Africa, of course, South Africa, the part I was in was extremely developed. I mean, they have DJI drone rental companies where you can go rent a $20,000 drone.
So,
yeah. And I think a lot of times they're even, some of their technology, like they get things before we do here in the States. I mean, it's that way with Garmin and in other countries, you know, they'll release something in Australia or wherever before we get it here.
Well, just like the Garmin, whatever they just released this past, everybody's starting
tracker.
Yeah. The LTE. Yeah. And that was all developed overseas for the guys that were running stags and stuff like that. And of course they have phone service, so it works out great. Then they just brought it over here. So yeah, same thing. Interesting. All right, let's get down to the dogs. Let's talk dogs for a little bit.
Okay.
And I know, like I said, it's all over your YouTube stuff, but just in case we have one person that does not subscribe, like, tell us a little bit about your dogs. You're running pretty much all camp, aren't you?
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. With a few outcrosses. And of course, none of my dogs are directly from Mike. They're from dogs that Mike has bred throughout the years and my buddies have purchased. And then we've since made crosses with. So that's where mine, but like Bliss, which is my lead dog, she is a quarter, actually English. So, you know, I do have a little bit of different stuff in there. She's three quarter, Kemp blood. But the rest of them, yeah, they're all either almost completely out of dogs from him, or just maybe like an eighth here or something. Just so we do outcross them to try to prevent from breeding too closely. So
yeah, and that's kind of what I've done is I've taken my male dog that I got from Mike, and of course I've bred him four times now. One was to a registered walker female. That's my A litter. And I bred him to, wait a second. So maybe it's only three. One, two, three. Yeah, I've only got three. No. One, two, three. Three litters out of him. Sorry. I was going to breed him to another female that, anyway, she got bred accidentally, so that didn't happen. And then I've got Kate, which is half sister, same dads, different moms. And I bred her. I kind of did the same thing. I bred her to another dog that come from Mike, but it was the older line of dogs. And of course I have four of those puppies.
Okay.
So yeah. So I'm kind of doing the same thing, but here, you know, I want to keep that speed and I will just, you know, be transparent here. Like the A litter, when I bred back to the registered walker, I've still got good speed, but I don't have that I'm going to catch regardless. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, like, absolutely.
They do a great job. Great job. They open really good on older tracks, which was something I was looking for. And they run good. Like most people probably wouldn't notice it, but when I have the straight Kemp dogs down, there's something extra there that I did not get.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the same experience that we have. When I started hound hunting, I got really lucky. And the guys that I hunt with had, you know, kind of figured that out. They had went through, you know, they hunted everything, every type of breed, cross, line, yada, yada, yada. And then when I started is when they really started hammering the Kemp stuff. And just because the country, you know, we hunt with high walls and different types of crazy terrain takes a athletic, fast dog to get through that and be able to catch bears in that terrain.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's definitely a difference. What you're talking about, that truly run to catch, like I'm not going to stop.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's just a lot of what people call heart, I guess you'd say. You know, and not, I've seen dogs out of the same litter that one dog will have that another dog won't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that can definitely happen, but.
Yeah. It's a little extra. And like I said, the majority of people would never see it,
right?
Because it's that minute. But in the same sense, it's not also that big. Like, you know, if you're really paying attention, you're really watching, you're like, gosh, man, that dog got an extra gear. Like,
right.
He done maxed out. Now he's in overdrive.
Right.
And I know you and I talked about that down in Tennessee too. Like,
yeah, that extra step. And it's funny, like, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, making out crosses is something that, you know, I'm just now starting to really dabble into and look for certain dogs. And it's so hard for me to trust someone as far as when they're saying, like, I see these guys advertising these dogs, reproducer, stud this, whatever. I don't care. I want to see the dog in the woods and I want to hunt with the dog in the woods. To determine, because what someone considers fast for them may not be fast for me. What someone considers cold nosed for them may not be cold nosed for me, because I have truly hunted with fast dogs and cold nosed dogs. So like trying to figure out who I'm going to outcross to, what I'm going to outcross to. And you know how it is. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are just full of crap. Like, what are you talking? I mean,
not in the hound world,
right? You go hunt with them one time and you're like, dude, you're lying to yourself.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's what, like, if I found a, let's say, you know, you got walkers and plots, rivals, yada, yada, yada. If I found a plot that was cold nose fast, I don't care. That's, and I'm not saying there's not any out there that are cold nose or fast, but I'm saying the real deal dog, like this is a one in a million dog. That's the dog I'm breeding to. I don't care what color it is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter. If that dog has every trait I'm looking for, and that's the, you know, that is the dog, and that's what I'm going to breed to.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've learned, and like I said, we've talked to people on the podcast that's put a different, perspective in it for me, and some of the old timers, you'll hear them talk about it, but not only do I want to know about the dog that I want to breed to, I want to know about his brothers and sisters. And then I want to know about, you know, his parents' brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I want a little bit more information. So is he out of a good litter? Is that dog, he or she, are they out of good litters? And if they're out of good litters, where the majority of the litters turned out to do what they're supposed to. And that don't mean they all have to be world beaters, right? They need to be able to run, tree, bay, and stay.
Right. Simple, yeah. Right? If that one doesn't want some one in 100 outlier.
Well, and I'll tell you a quick one after I get done with this, but I want to know about the litter itself. And if any of those dogs in the litter have been bred, what they're producing. And then I want to go back to the parents, and there's where you get in trouble. Like, I've got a female out here that's got pups on her right now, and I can tell you everything about her dad. Like, I raised her dad. I raised her dad's mom. I raised her dad's dad. I raised her dad's dad. Like, I raised dogs back five generations. Like, I can tell you everything about them, good, bad, and indifferent.
Right.
But now her mother was purchased by a buddy of mine and was told this is what she's out of. But through my experience with the Walker breed and the coloration of the dogs, what we were told does not meet what I'm seeing as far as, you know, color code. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I don't have a lot of background there. So when I went and bred her, I bred her back to a great, she's a granddaughter of my old dog, and I bred her back to a great, great grandson. So that the dog that I bred to, his mother come out of a gyp that was bred to my dog, which goes back to that same line. Like, I can tell you everything on his mama's side. Like, I can tell you back five, six, seven generations.
Yeah.
People that's hunted with them, either I've hunted with them or people that's hunted with them, what they do in most of their litters, I can tell you what it is. Now, the dad, we know where he come from, and we know that he produced really good dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a whole lot of information, but I'm hoping that the two outcrosses that were made on that, the line breeding that we did, I hope it holds true enough to get a lot of what my old stock was, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, something to consider too is you might have this isn't always the case, but let's say you have a litter of dogs and you sell them, you pass them out, whatever. It's sometimes hard to judge a litter depending on who has those dogs and how they were hunted, handled. So it can be difficult to get a good, it can be difficult to get a good hand, you know, an idea on those dogs or that total litter if they weren't handled correctly or hunted enough. Or, you know, I've seen guys that will get a young dog and then they will keep it in the box until a bear crosses right in front of them, and then they dump it on it. And they'll do that for the first 2 years of its life and just depend on their old dogs. And then the dog is 4 years old before you know it, and they complain that the dog can't trail. They don't know why. It's not trailing at, you know, it's not cold-nosed at all. I was like, dude, that dog could have the coldest nose in the world, but you didn't give it an opportunity to learn to hunt. And now it's mature. So I don't know, you know, if you just rely on that hot track and turn, you know, it's not going to ever learn to hunt. You've missed those crucial years.
It's fun. It's cracking me up because the podcast that airs before this one, I literally say the exact words that come out of your mouth. When you dump a dog on hot tracks, because that's how we get them started, right? You know, the easiest thing is a bear crosses a road, you grab that young dog or two and boom, put them right on that track and they go on. And then you do it and then you do it and then you do it. And then, like you said, they're 2 years old. And now you got a dog that don't trail and you're like, this dog's got a hot nose on him. This dog, you know, well, wait a second, dude. You created this. You classical conditioned this dog to hot tracks.
Yeah.
And I actually had a guy, I'm going to tell this story because it was really good. And his example was, I thought was really good. So, Scott, this is your story. And I'm giving you credit for it. A guy texted me this evening and was talking about that he'd listened on the podcast and that I had, my dogs were, they were rigging bear, not tracks. Right. And so anyway, he said, hey, I've run across this. Just want to throw this out here at you. So he had a coon dog, a red bone, that he thought the same thing. The dog was basically, when he opened 40 yards, the dog was treed every time, night after night after night. So in February, he decided to start dry holing him, taking him where he knew there wasn't coons and he had to go out and hunt.
Yeah.
And I'd have to go back through the text messages, but the gist of it was that after a few nights or a week, the dog went in there about, I don't know, 400 or 500, 600 yards and got treed. And then the next night he took the dog. He said, this dog give out a big long ball. And he's like, what was that? Well, his dog started trailing and got down and started trailing. And from that day on, you know, he was doing what he was supposed to. And that's what he said. He said, I conditioned this, you know, I did this.
Right.
And I don't think people, let's take a step back and say, okay, how did I contribute to this trait? Is this something all dogs can smell? We know it. You know, that's why they got 220 million scent receptors and we have five. Like, right, they got the nose. But we condition some of this stuff, and I'm at fault. Like, the pack of dogs that I'm running right now, I am working hard to change some of the stuff, to undo some of the training scars, because that's what we call them in canine training scars. I'm trying to undo some of the training scars that I've already done.
Yep. No, I mean, that makes that I totally agree, because that's I've had the same exact experience. I mean, I love the December season for us here in West Virginia. I love it because I'll take young dogs out there and free cast them with my older dogs. And you know what I'm trying to do there is develop that dog and let it find a colder track, especially in December, where that bear might be a 12-hour old track, whatever it is. And my old dogs are in there trailing on it. And that pup, when they're trailing, it will take them no time to figure out, hey, we're trailing, this is what we're doing. But if you don't ever give them that opportunity, or you're scared they're going to run a deer and blow it up or whatever, but that's you've got to do that stuff if you're going to develop those dogs. I mean, it is that for me, developing those young pups are as much fun as anything else. I love raising a dog until it's 2, 2.5 years old. And then it becomes, once they've really got it down and they're just lights out, and I can just send them down a point and they'll go find a bear, it becomes just less interesting to me. I mean, it's weird. It's like, I don't know. Last year I moved some of my older dogs. I gave them to friends of mine, buddies that I hunt with on occasion, and I raised some other young dogs just because I wanted to raise and develop those pups, because those older dogs, they were what they were going to be, and they're great. One of them is the Tron dog that you see in my videos. Mm-hmm. Now he's a buddy of mine's go-to rig dog. He uses him. I went over and hunted with him recently, and that's who he put on the ground to start the track. And it always makes me feel proud because I helped develop and get that dog to that point. I mean, I remember having him out by himself when he was 7 months old. No, he was a little bit older than back. He was 9 months old, and it was the second coon he had ever treed. I had him out, and he rigged the track. It was a track. The coon was a good ways away. He trailed on it for a while, and then, boom, popped up treed by himself. And I was hunting him from that point. You know, before that, I was hunting him by himself and giving that dog the opportunity to, you know, figure it out on his own. I had hunted him with older dogs, and then I stopped. Once I figured out this dog could tree a coon, then I started taking him by himself. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I transitioned that into bear hunting. I used him as a rig dog, as a star dog. And then, you know, like I said, I ended up giving him to a friend of mine just so I could raise some more pups.
Yeah. And Kurt, you hit on something. I mean, I know I've probably said it, but maybe I'm going to say it again. You've got to allow those dogs to make mistakes. You know, Yeah. You can't be afraid, just like you can't be afraid to if your dog runs a deer. Okay, you gather him up, you work on the issue, and you turn him loose again. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you can't be afraid. But at the same time, one of my mentors, Pappy, always told me that if that dog's running trash, yes, we do not want that. But that dog is gaining experience on running.
Right.
Or trailing, or, you know, whatever, if it starts out trailing and then jumps, whatever, you know, that dog just had a lesson. It's just on the wrong odor. So when we switch him over to the right odor, then he's already a step up. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people look at it like that. You know, again, our ego gets in the way because, well, my dog's just trashed on a deer and Kurt's here's treed a bear and mine's over here running trash.
Right.
Well, you know what? Tomorrow, mine will tree the bear. And yours may be running a deer. You know, right. It happens. Like,
right.
And that's what
it happens with this. I apologize for interrupting you, but I want to hit on that point there. What it is, guys in bear groups. I've got bear groups. We talk smack to each other, you know, and it's funny, but, you know, sometimes egos get the best of you. And whenever that starts to happen, then it starts hurting your dog's performance. And then, you know, it's not good. So you can't be afraid. If my dog screws up and runs junk or something, I just laugh it off. Oh, well, you know, I mean, they're learning. Sorry, I don't know. You know, get it up, try again. You know, that's the only way that dog's going to get better, is to fail and then keep move forward.
And I say this all the time, even though it's December, which is our harvest season, it's still training season, man, for my young dogs. Like,
absolutely,
they're learning. I'm training. I'm learning.
Now, your mind might shift a little bit if you come across a big 300, 400 pound bear track in the snow. You might say, okay, you know, we might want to put the pups up for this one. We're going to take care of business. And we're the same way. But most of the time, you know, even December, and I'm free casting or whatever, I'm sending all the pups. I'll dump the whole box and send them down a point and see which one's going to come out with it. Because I've been shocked before. Where your old dog is supposed to be the one that you're counting on, and then you keep giving those young ones an opportunity. Next thing you know, that young one is now going to be a start dog for you because it developed and figured it out and let you see that it has the ability. So
you got to give them. Yeah, that's right. But you got to give them that opportunity.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So now when we talked and like I said, when we talked at Plot Days, you know, I really felt like you and I had a lot of the same thought process and, you know, we had talked about pups and you were talking to a guy, he was with Jody Lambert. I don't know his name, but he was a taller, bigger guy. And y'all were talking about pups and I was standing over there talking to Jody, but I was listening to you and you were talking about, you know, he was asking about pups and you said, well, I just let mine run loose, you know, and I do the same, you know, you and I have, the ability to do that. Like I let mine run loose until they start taking off. And when they start taking off, I put them up. And you told him the exact same thing. Like when they go back in the holler and start running deer, I know it's time to put them up and start working on them.
Yep. That's to a T. Literally. I mean, like the Ding Ding, the pup. I mentioned him a lot in my videos. I knew it was time to put him up when I pulled in the driveway one day and got out of my truck and he's not there. He's always there to greet me. And I hear, oh, you know, back at the head of the holler behind my house. And I'm like, I'm smiling ear to ear. He's going to come back. I know he's going to come back. But up until that point, he's got to run around. He's got to be a pup. He's got to socialize. I mean, my pups harass the UPS man, harass him. He carries treats on him every time he pulls in, which is usually weekly. I mean, not weekly, daily at my house. My pup that's currently outside and he's in the puppy free ranging process right now. He runs up on the truck and he's literally back there with him getting packages out of the back and whatnot to get treats and stuff. So they're just getting to be pups, run around, meet everybody that pulls in, and they get to learn how to stay away from vehicles. I mean, that's something that you don't really think about, but like my pup that's out here now, he knows how to stay. I watch him when I'm backing out. I'm always looking for him and he is getting away. And I think that is even crucial for him. They learn that that's a danger and that could hurt me. Once they take off after those first few deer, that's what it is usually at my house. I'll hear him running a deer or something. I'm like, well, it's time to put you up. But I know when I take you bear hunting, it may not happen the first time. The second time you're going to run that bear.
Yep. And I'm in the same. It's funny you talk about because the ups, I had Vice, which is my shepherd, and he scares the crap out of people. I mean, he's an 80 pound shepherd. And, you know, I got a police car sitting here that says canine. I got signs on my kennels that says beware, caution. Every time he pulls up, like he's looking for Vice. But I had Briggs out in the yard this evening. He pulls up and they both, boom, they're right over there. It's exact same thing. So, yeah, it's, and I guess, you know, a lot of, we're really blessed to be able to leave our dogs loose like that. Cause I know a lot of people can't do it. And especially if you live in a neighborhood or a housing development, you can't do it.
Right. Right.
Near main roads.
I specifically like where I live right now, I specifically picked up for dogs. Like that was part of the top criteria is one, I got to have fiber optic internet so I can upload my videos at a decent speed. Two, I got to be somewhat close to where my wife works to keep her happy. And three, I got to have somewhere that no one really cares about my dogs and they're not bothering anybody. And I can let them occasionally run free.
Isn't it crazy that we buy our place? And I did the same when I bought this place, I did the same thing. Like I bought it because nobody was going to fuss about my dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know, it's just a matter of, of course, if you live in a housing development or whatever, you can have hounds too, but it's just, it's, you know how it is. I can't imagine having neighbors on top of me and trying to keep my dogs quiet all the time. Most of the time they are quiet, but when it comes to feed time, they go, they go wild. And I'm fine with that, but, it was crucial for me when buying a house to not have that headache, because I'm always going to have those dogs. You know, I can always find a different house somewhere else too.
Yeah. That's for sure. So any other training philosophies, thoughts, or anything like that that you have on your mind that you think people should know or would want to know?
Yeah, I guess something. I had a litter of pups that I had out of Bliss. It's the only litter of pups I've ever raised. And I guess this has to do with training. I kept them all until they were like 6 or 7 months old. And that is difficult. I don't know that I would do it again. But what I wanted to make sure of, and you know, I don't want it to sound bad to the people that I gave other dogs to, but what I wanted to make sure of is that I got the cream of the crop from the litter, because to have, you know, I don't care if you have a litter of, you know, 8 or whatever it is, there's always going to be a standout or two. I'm not saying they're not all going to be great, but there might be one that's a little ahead of the other. And that can, you know, they can develop later on. And one that you didn't think was going to be good could turn out to be the best one of the litter. You never know. But I guess, yeah, for me, when if you're listening to this, you have a litter of dogs. It is difficult to keep that many and train, you know, develop them properly. I feel like I held on to them a little too long, which for what I was able to do in the time I had. I wish I would have let go of them a little bit earlier, but I also do think I don't know that I got the best, but I definitely think it was worth the efforts, because I got 2 females out of the litter that are going to be a huge part of my pack. They're going into their second year of really hunting, and that's Biscuit and Tammy. If you watch my videos, and like in the last video I uploaded, actually Biscuit, Tammy, and Ding Ding were the 3 dogs in the front that actually put the bear up. And then Brother, Debo, and Bliss were just a little bit behind. But I was happy to see that, because Ding Ding is out of Brother, and Bliss, those are her 2 pups. And, you know, their offspring are now, you know, in 2 years' time, now beating them and putting bears up. So it's telling me that I'm making, you know, the right breeding decisions and keeping the right pups. So, I don't know if that's really advice, but that was kind of a, something that I don't know that I held on to them for too long, but if you try to do that, it can be rough.
Well, I'm in that boat. The last couple litters, I've kept them till about 5 or 6. This litter that I've got now, I got 4 that's 10 months old. And I keep telling myself, Heath, you cannot hunt 4 young. You cannot do it. You can't do it. But the way that when they were born and I've not been able, the Canada trip got me a little behind, because I spent a lot of time trying to get my other dogs in shape. Mm-hmm. And then I made the decision that, listen, I'm not taking 15 dogs to Canada.
Right.
So I left the puppies at home. And when I made the decision I was going to do that, I was just like, all right, I kind of put them on the back burner. And when I mean that, I mean, I didn't have them out letting them run stuff, doing that. I still work with them every day and do that. But I didn't run them. And like now, like I'm in a dead period. You know, it's too hot to go down to North Carolina. Like, it's July. I've got 1 month before season comes in, and I know that I'm not going to be able to hunt these dogs, but I've got to find out which one is doing what. Right. Like, I've got to, and I'm in your shoes. Like, I probably should have sold 1 or 2 of them and let them go. And I feel like exactly what you said. I don't know that I'm going to be able to do all 4 of them justice.
Right.
Because it's just too many young dogs, too much.
Yeah, it's so hard. It sounds great, and I'm not saying I wouldn't try it again, maybe, but I don't know that I would. It's a lot to take on. I mean, trying to hunt all those and develop them and trying to figure out which is going to be the best, it's not easy. Not easy to do. Like I said, I think I made the right choice, but I don't know that for sure. I mean, the pups that I sent out, as far as I know, you know, they're all doing well. to a degree. There was like one or two that they weren't happy with. But the ones, you know, the ones that I felt like got a really fair shot are all doing well. So,
well, and you kind of hit on that before, is it depends on where the dog goes and what kind of opportunities they get there. And that's very, very tough in pup placements. Like,
absolutely.
It is. Like, you want some of your best friends to have these dogs because they're close and you know, whatever. But in the back of your mind, you're like, golly, geez, man, they're only going to hunt on weekends. And, you know, so that dog's going to get to hunt 15 days out of the year.
Yeah.
It's not, you're never going to know.
Right. And they could have just an absolute stud and it's just sitting there, just mm-hmm. wasting. And you'll never know what that dog could have been.
Yeah.
That's just a sick feeling. I mean, it is. And then you never know, like when you have a litter and you pass them out or whatnot, you don't know the people, you know, you think you might know them or what, but you just don't know how that dog's going to be treated, what the opportunities is going to be given. And that's like knowing like we talked about earlier, knowing the history of its brothers and sisters and stuff. For me, that is so hard to get an accurate gauge on unless I've hunted with each of those people and they know. I'm not just judging them based off their Facebook pictures that they upload a bear tree every 3 days, but it's actually their cousin Bobby that's treeing mm-hmm. them. And they're just there taking pictures, but mm-hmm. looking at them, you think they're experts.
And it's hard. It's hard to sift through that. I mean,
it is. It is so hard. So hard.
Yeah. No, I think that's if you're trying to make your dogs and dogs better in general, you got to take a little time and filter through it.
Yeah.
And I've been kind of going on word of mouth of some of my friends that I trust because I don't have an opportunity to do X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to have that opportunity to
hunt
with all those dogs or all those people. And
mm-hmm. It is. And like you said, just because I think it's a good dog don't mean you're going to think you may like, man, I don't know why he's feeding that thing.
Right.
It just because it suits me, it doesn't mean it's going to suit everybody else. And I talked about that in a podcast that just aired too. Like I've let three of my dogs go, since May. And like one of them was not out of my stuff. I bought her to kind of help my young dogs, mm-hmm. but I don't need her anymore. So there wasn't that emotional attachment to her.
Yeah.
So it was okay. And then the other two, man, I raised them, trained them. And I'm like, God, it hurts. Like, it's like you said, I can't keep them all. Like I'm moving on to the next litter.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't want to let those dogs go. And I told the guys that ended up with them, like, just because they suit me, you may not like them. You may not like them at all. So, you know, you have an out. They're always welcome back at my house. So it was hard for me because I haven't, you know, I really haven't sold a bunch of dogs. And most time I'm giving them to my buddies that I hunt with. That's what I do.
Yeah. Same here. I've never advertised selling one. Mm-hmm. I think I've sold two ever. And I knew both guys I sold them to.
Same here.
I get asked literally daily if I can buy a dog, what dog am I hunting because of the videos. Mm-hmm. And it's just not something I could just go grab a couple walkers, breed the crap out of them, make a pile of money for a while till, you know, it catches up with you.
Yeah.
But because of the videos, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not, I have the same type of attachment that you have to them. I mm-hmm. mean, I know exactly what you're saying. The dogs that I have moved and stuff have not been easy, but the only thing that the way I justify it is, okay, I've got other dogs that I want. I'm going to develop these dogs. I've got them. And these older dogs now that are topped out, I'm not going to do them justice leaving them at the house all the time. You know, it's selfish of me just because I'm emotionally attached to them to leave them here and hunt them on occasion and stuff. It's selfish. And so it may be hard, but every, you know, the ones I have moved, I don't regret it because I know that at least they're going to somewhere that they're going to be appreciated. They're going to be hunted and taken care of. And that, for me, that's all I need to know that I can justify doing it. It's hard for me to sell a dog to some, you know, Joe Schmo that sent me a DM on Facebook. It is hard. It's hard. Yeah. I really want to know you before I give you a dog. And that's not saying that I won't ever, you know, do that. But, I get what you're saying. That there's definitely, I have an emotional attachment to my dogs. And a lot of houndsmen, of course, you know the stereotype, like, you know, whatever. You can't be afraid to call them, you know. Yeah. Those guys go on. But I'm one that will come out and say I absolutely love my dogs. So
yes. I mean, it's an emotional investment. Like the time, I mean, you know, you show videos of you fooling with your dogs. Like I'm out with my dogs every day, whether I'm hunting them or not. Again, there's volleyball that I go in and I feed them and I pet them on the head and I take off. But like if I'm at home, like I'm spending some time, it may be 5 minutes here and there, 10 minutes here and there. Like I had Briggs out today, just let him out and let him run around the yard for a little bit. I mean, it was 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes at the tops, but it's an emotional and it's also an investment, like so much time, and you can't get time back. Right. Like you can't put a price tag on time. Right. Like there's so much time invested into these dogs with like what you're saying with the, you know, with the love and the care and the training and the development and all the gas, we can go on and on and on that, like this, we're climbing a mountain we're never going to get to the top of, but, that's what people don't see. And that's what, I don't know how everybody feels about it, but that's definitely how I feel about it.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. And you've got your family that probably get attached to all the dogs. I mean, that's
why I got 4 pups.
All right. Yeah.
We're not getting rid of any of them. We're not getting, I'm like, what? We can't keep them. And then here we are. We got them. Here we go.
Exactly.
And I've got 6 more out here that I bred her to keep one male. That was my goal. One male. And if it was up to them, we'd have 6 more puppies out here. Gosh, y'all killing me. Like I can't keep feeding all these dogs and here's the pinch I've got myself into. So I got these 4 pups that are 10 months old and I'm calling it pups. I don't know what everybody else's terminology is, but I've got 2 year olds. I got one that's 14 months old, and one's 16 months old. So year and a half and a little under a year and a half. And I've got them started, but they're nowhere near where they need to be.
Yep.
Because of lack of hunting, you know, the seasons last year, I literally just got her started, took her to Maine, to Canada. So on top of having 4 pups that I need to train, I've got 2 year and a half olds that are in the same boat that the 4. So I've got 6 and it's impossible. It's impossible. If you can figure out a way, please let me know, because I do it and do it right. It's one dog.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah.
One dog at a time.
That's right. That's the way
to do it right.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Kurt. Well, what, anything you want to leave us with, training, any hunting advice? We don't care. Lay it on us.
Let me see here. I guess, you know, just advice. My advice would be, coming from somebody. So I don't come from a hound hunting background. My dad is a white-tailed deer hunter, does a little bit of turkey hunting. My grandpa doesn't hound hunt. I'm a first generation houndsman. So I think I was lucky in that regard, because I didn't come into it with a lot of the wives' tales and stuff that you hear. I mean, it was easy for me to pick up on. So I guess my one piece of advice would be, just be careful of the information you're listening to. If you're listening to this podcast, I think you're getting some pretty daggone good information. Not just this podcast in particular, maybe not this one, maybe any other one, but this one. But in general, the guest you have on here, the knowledge you have, Heath, just be very careful of the, you know, who you listen to. And even, you know, there could be things that we've said that aren't necessarily correct. That's just been our experience. So just be careful where you get your information from, would be my piece of advice.
Well, and I want to follow up with that, because when I teach, I teach a lot, whether it's canine schools or I teach at the academy, I teach at a couple academies. And when I go up and introduce myself and tell everybody who I am and what I do, I tell them this, that just because I'm standing here telling you something, that means that you should go and do your own research and find out if I'm telling you right or wrong.
Right.
And I tell every class that because through the academy, when I was sitting there 20 some plus years ago, everything the instructors told me, I took as gospel. Like, okay, this is what you do. Or, right. And I've learned through experience and some bad experiences and some miserable failures that, you should always go and do your own research. You should always follow up. And if somebody tells you something, go ask two or three more people. You may get two or three different opinions or, follow up like what you said. Yeah, I want to go hunt with that dog. Mind if we take it? And if somebody tells you no, that's probably a red flag.
Absolutely.
And in fact, I seen somebody post this on Facebook the other day. They posted a dog for sale, and it was fairly cheap. It was $500, $600, $700. I can't remember. And they said there'll be no trials. Dog is what it is. Okay, so I'm thinking to myself, no trial. Oh, and if they're saying the dog is what it is, are they selling it cheap because the dog's not what it should be?
Right.
Or are they trying to, they don't want you to see what it is, and then you end up with a $600 dog, and then you can't get rid of it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great advice.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Just broaden your horizon. And don't take anything as gospel. Like you said, do your own research.
Yep. Find out for yourself, because what you see and what you like may not be what you're being told.
Yeah. Absolutely. Just because daddy and granddaddy and great granddaddy did this or whatever doesn't mean it's true either.
That's right. This is one thing. It's a pet peeve of mine. Don't never say, well, that's always the way we done it.
Exactly.
No, yeah. We can change. We can change and make things better. So
yeah. Even my opinions, like I know years ago when I was doing podcasts, I may have said something that was just totally wrong. Totally. So I'm constantly changing and not a bit afraid to admit that I'm wrong. And my opinions on dogs may change. And, that's just part of it. If you're not trying to almost prove yourself wrong, then I don't think you're doing yourself or your dogs justice.
That's how you grow.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Kirk, I appreciate you taking time out of your day. Like I said, I'm it's been a pleasure having you on. Conversation's been great. And I hope that you have a great season and everybody joins in and subscribes and likes and follows you and sees how your season comes out.
Awesome. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being on, and I just want to thank you for having me.
All right, man. We're going to catch up. And we're gonna do some hunting ourselves.
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.